All right. Hey, everybody. This is episode 64 of Eat, Drink, Write, an Urban Fantasy Whiteboard. We're going to talk about creating tension in your novel. We had talked about conflict, which is not the same thing, and we'll talk about the differences this week. But before we get to all that, how was your week?
It was good. Exhausting. I have started. So I had that big talk. I think I've definitely mentioned it here because I was
I
mess.
think
I was
so.
I was emotionally wrecked. So I had that talk and it went really, really well. And now I know like all of the steps that I need to do for my science. So I'm doing all of those experiments. So I did, one experiment that took 16 hours last week or this week. And now I need to redo that 16-hour experiment. So it's very busy. And I'm a little bit brain dead. So brain is very tired. Yeah, I haven't had time for any writing, unfortunately. I was on a good roll there for a while and
you sure were.
Kind of fell off that track. So hopefully I'll get back onto that now that I'm doing experiments and my downtime can be relaxing by writing. So I'll probably try to get into that. I apologize ahead of time too. I can't talk today. So
well, I apologize ahead of time too. I had my COVID shot today.
Wow.
I'm not having, when I first got it, I felt nauseous, but that could have been because it was a needle. I don't know that it was the injection itself, but, my arm is very, very sore and I always talk with my hands. So this is going to be a painful episode.
Oh, did you get it in your right arm?
I did because it was a drive-through. And
oh,
dad
I see.
Driving. So he drove. So he got his and his dominant arm because he's left-handed and I got mine and my dominant arm and I'm right-handed. We should have switched.
Right. Yeah. When I got my rabies vaccinations a few years ago, the lady was like, is it cool if I do your left arm? And I was like, yeah, sure. And I didn't even think anything of it. And then my arm was super sore and I was like, oh, most people are right-handed. I'm left-handed.
Yeah.
So like getting it in my left arm was like normal for her. And I was like, didn't even think about it. And I was like, I could not do much with my arm. So
yeah, your dad is having no effects at all. His arm isn't even sore. He said,
good.
If it wasn't for the Band-Aid that he still hasn't taken off. He wouldn't have even known he had a shot, but mine is a circle about this big around the shot site that is sore and achy.
Yeah.
And I mean, even hurts to move. Although I feel much better now that I've had I took two Motrin when we got home.
Yeah. Yeah. I hear that's pretty common. So hopefully that goes away soon.
Yeah. Hopefully I won't feel like I've got the flu tomorrow. I'm tired, but I should be tired because I've been running around. Last week was the chaos court. So I survived that. I slept for 12 hours.
Wow.
On Friday night. I went to bed at 7:30. I said, I'm sorry. I am exhausted. And I slept for 12 hours. And Sunday, I did crafts all day, trying to get all my Etsy stuff up and running. I did a lot of painting and that kind of thing. And then today I was like, okay, I'm going to do court follow-up. And then Mike called the health department and they're like, yeah, come on down. And we're like, what?
That's awesome.
Yeah, I guess I should tell everybody we live in near Atlanta, and so there have been no appointments. As soon as anything opens up, it's sold out. Not sold out, but
but
filled
closed.
Up. And his parents live down in Monticello, Georgia, which is a little teeny tiny town, and so he's like, you know, we could make a day of it and go get our shot and visit them at the same time. And I was like, yeah, right, it's going to be full. And we called and they're like, yeah, come on down. And we're like, what crap?
Nice.
Now we got to get
very
in the
nice
car and go. But I am so glad we've had shot number one.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I'm very pleased.
That is so good.
And we just got the email about Riley School where we could either opt for virtual this fall or not, and we'll have to see what she says.
Yeah,
I think she's going to go virtual.
I mean, yeah, she seems very adamant about doing the virtual thing. Yeah. And, you know, I don't blame her after know, all the COVID stuff. So,
yeah. And she always has really bad bronchitis every year and she hasn't been sick in a year.
Yeah.
I mean, and when she gets sick, she's out for like a week.
Yeah. Yeah.
She's really school sick. And they always send us those truant letters and all that. And I'm like, you know, it's your school that's making her sick. So she is loving not getting sick because of Zoom. So I have a feeling she's going to choose virtual, but I don't know for sure.
True.
But that was totally off point, guys. Sorry about that. I went on a tangent there. My brain is just going. Oh, what are you eating and drinking?
wait. So I've noticed that a lot of the snacks that I like are very crunchy. Mm-hmm. So I ate my snack, beforehand, but it was a, cheese, the garlic cheese spread, like the Alouette.
Oh crunch, yeah.
With crackers.
We've got some of that too.
It's so good.
But I can't eat crackers.
Oh, well, but you got like other things that you can use. Mm-hmm. And then I'm drinking a lime vodka soda. So nice. My speech will get even worse. I apologize.
It's going to be a fun one, y'all. I am just having wine. I really wanted, when we went up to Helen the other weekend that I talked about, your dad got this coffee drink and it was called the Cowboy Jack. And it was coffee with cream and honey Jack Daniels.
Oh, wow.
And the honey Jack Daniels is not going to be keto, but it's not going to have enough, you know, a tablespoon of it in a coffee is not going to take me off ketosis. So that's what I wanted, but we never got around to buying the honey Jack Daniels. So I am drinking my regular wine and we ordered Mexican food because dad knew that by the time we got done doing this, I wasn't going to feel like cooking.
Yeah, no, that sounds great. Sounds wonderful.
So that was what we're eating and drinking. It hadn't been too much fun lately. It was a lot more fun when we were together.
We can always do a lot more creative stuff when we're together. Yeah.
Yeah. I miss being together. Hopefully you'll get your shot soon too.
I hope so.
I have jokes.
Oh yes. Let's hear them.
It's about tension.
Oh good.
Yeah. The movie about killing dwarf vampires has no tension. The stakes are too low.
That's pretty good.
How do you create tension? I'll tell you tomorrow.
Oh, wow. Rude.
What do you call tension in the percussion section?
What?
Drama.
I love it.
Me too. I thought those were fun. Sometimes it's easy to find jokes and sometimes it's not so easy.
Yeah.
So tell me about tension.
All right. So to start us off, what is tension? So tension is that element in a novel that evokes emotions like worry, anxiety, fear, stress on the part of like both the reader and the characters in your novel. So it applies to both your like main character, your protagonist, your antagonist, as well as your audience. There is going to be like a little bit of overlap with our conflict episode, like you mentioned before.
Yeah.
But tension and conflict are actually different elements of a story, despite the fact that they typically walk hand in hand. Mm-hmm. Tension simmers beneath the surface while conflict is generally out in the open. So like it's tension realized.
I love that. Tension realized. That is the best definition. I think that I when I was doing research, that's better than anything I found. Also, tension is what leads to conflict. So they definitely are two different things, but they can be similar.
Right.
Going to my geeky Latin self, the word tension itself comes from the Latin meaning to stretch, which if you think about tension, you know, you stretch the wires, you know, you pull a rubber band, that's tension, right. Rubber band. Tension is a state of uncertainty and the anxiety that it attracts.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, I like that definition too, but I think I like yours better. The tension, it's tension.
Conflict is tension realized.
I think that's very smart.
Yeah, no, I love it too. And I think it's a really good point because like conflict is very visible. You see, you know, my character punches the antagonist. That's right. A conflict. And the tension is what leads up to that mm-hmm. punch, which yep. I think is really cool.
Me too.
So why is it important? Why do we care about using tension in our stories? It can be very engaging for your readers and it gets them emotionally invested in the story, which we always want. Mm-hmm. And it gives your readers a sense of anticipation. So like they'll want to keep turning pages, they'll buy more of your books, that kind of thing.
Yeah, I found a really cool, it's not really a quote, but I found this on a blog and I didn't write down where I got it from, but it's a very well-written sentence about why it's so important. It says, it can spellbind your readers and leave them breathless on the edge of their seats and biting their nails in anticipation for what will happen next.
That is a lovely sentence.
Isn't that beautiful? That's a very beautiful sentence. And it really does capture why tension is so important. You want all those things. You want your reader to be breathless and, you know, on the edge of their seat going, what's going to happen? What's going to happen?
Absolutely. You know, we ought to start posting like links to the blogs that we use to do this research, because it would be very beneficial for
that's a good idea
to be able to go and look at them. I mean, granted, we use a lot of that information, so a lot of what we say will be in the blog. But it would be really good to, you know, explore those blogs more.
Because a lot of times they go into a whole lot more depth than what we're covering in our podcast episode.
Right.
And, you know, and the fact I didn't read the whole blog that quote came from, but the fact that he or she wrote, that's a beautiful sentence to me. Yeah. I really like that. It's very well written. And I'm curious to go and read more by that person. And so it would be helpful to our listeners to be able to go and find these people and go, wow, just like we are, and, you know, like them, like we do, and get whatever more out of them than what we can offer here on our little podcast.
Yeah. I think that'd be a good idea.
I'm sorry. I rambled.
No, that was fine. It was all very relevant. At least it wasn't a tangent.
So. That's true.
We do that too.
That's true.
All right. So there are different kinds of tension that you can use in your novel. So like relationship tension. And this is a type of tension that pretty much everyone can relate to. I think, you know, we interact with all kinds of people in our everyday lives. Mm-hmm. So like, and I'm not just talking about romantic tension, although that is part of this, but like, you know, tensions between friendships. You know, you've got your friendship drama, gossip that goes around, and then of course your romantic relationships.
You know, your frenemies.
Yeah, no, exactly.
Yeah.
And then the point of tension here is between characters. And this is really what's important about this type of tension. So it can be tension between families. Like it doesn't have to be just two characters. It can be entire families. It can be entire groups of friends. You know, you've got, think about like, any TV show that uses gang warfare, you know, it's gang against gang, that kind of
which
thing.
Which is a family type thing too. Your dad's watching Sons of Anarchy again.
So oh, nice.
Speaking of gangs, they are truly a family, and mm-hmm. the tension amongst all of them is just, it's crazy.
Yeah.
That's one that I didn't really want to watch a second time. It was fantastic.
Oh.
And have you watched it?
I have not. I need to.
You do. I would watch it the one time. And right now I'm catching parts of it again because your dad's watching it.
Right.
But anyway, that family point that you made, that is a really good point. Think about, well, young adult for sure, but beyond the young adult, think about a character who might want to do something that the family doesn't approve of, which you do see in young adult. That's, you know, I'm your parents and you can't do whatever.
Right.
I'm not necessarily talking about that, although that is a great one. But like in Frickin' Fairies,
yeah,
when she gets the sight and she can see the whole fey world all of a sudden, and before she understands that, she's blurting these things out to her family. Her family thinks that she is crazy, and so they organize an intervention. Poor Beck.
Yeah, poor Beck.
All because she can see the fairies and they can't, and so the family, that tension there is interesting, and to watch the family interact. She's got two sisters, a mom and a dad.
Yeah.
The dad is the one who kind of sits back and is like, yeah, you do you. And the mom is all worried. And, you know, the sisters are like, oh my God, she's lost her.
She's insane.
Yeah, what do we do? And, you know, so yeah, family tension is a big one.
I think so too. I think one of the examples that I saw as I was researching this was the family clashing between the families in Romeo and Juliet. So
oh yeah,
you know, so even like entire group against group also works for tension between characters.
Yeah, what's the? Oh well, I don't remember, and I'm watching Justified right now. So, you know, thinking of those kind of clans, the different clans warring against each other, and they have for hundreds of years, and one would kill one and then another would kill another.
Right.
And you've got those tensions. And then of course the romantic tension that between like Romeo and Juliet.
Yeah.
Set against the tensions of the two family units.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then also not just between like large groups, but the tension between your protagonist and antagonist is a huge one. I hear dogs.
Yes. I think your dad went to get dinner. So.
Ah, yeah. But the tension between your protagonist and your antagonist. So your reader is going to be hoping for your main character to be successful in their adventures and everything, but the antagonist is obviously going to get in the way.
Yeah. I like the relationships between the protagonist and the antagonist that have something deeper.
Yeah.
Like back to Justified again. I know I talk a lot about whatever I'm watching whenever I do these podcasts, but I look at the writing of those shows and they always have something that I can talk about with the topic that we do.
Yeah.
So in Justified, you have Boyd Crowder and the Marshall guy, the main character. They were friends back in high school, and not just in high school, they went and did mining together after high school. And I think Boyd had saved the Marshall's life at some point. So there is a strong connection.
Yeah.
But then one went on into criminal activity and the other one became a Marshall. So the tension between those two is amazing. Sometimes they're there for each other, backing each other up like the best friends they were back in high school. And right. sometimes they're trying to kill each other, literally wanting the other one dead, or at least in jail, or, you know, whatever. So that protagonist antagonist tension is brilliantly done. And just,
I love that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And those are my favorite. Because sometimes it's just, you know, Harry Potter and he who shall not be named.
Voldemort.
Voldemort. You know, and there is no intertwining backstory with the two of them.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, a little bit, but not
kind of, but
not like they were best friends. And, you know, there isn't that. And I really enjoy it when the main character and the antagonist are friends.
Right.
But they can't agree on what needs to happen.
Yeah. No, I like that a lot.
Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah. And that brings me to my next point, which is like, really just think about this in terms of, you know, you can use friends arguing, parents disciplining. So you mentioned the family aspect.
Yeah.
Passive aggression, silent treatments.
Yeah. Those are good ones. Oh, silent treatments. That is definitely raises the tension.
That's going to cause a huge amount of tension between your characters. And then your readers gonna be like, they're not talking to the main character. Why not? Or whatever.
And that it gives you that step to get to that final conflict that finally blows.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
So tension in relationships essentially just helps to make characters feel like real people. And I think that's the goal.
Oh yeah, for sure. Everybody has their own point of view of things. And sometimes we assume everybody's agreeing with me because I'm talking and they're not saying anything. And then, you know, the majority of the time they don't, especially we learned that during the political atmosphere that we have in the world right now. People are defriending each other, all kinds of stuff over politics.
Right.
And it is something that never came out before. And they just assumed everybody agreed with what they agreed with. And
right.
That creates tension. I've seen people on Facebook saying, you know, I've lost my family. They won't talk to me anymore. So, yeah.
No, and like you said, that is tension that is, you know, that has occurred in everyday life. Like that is, you know, realistic.
Mm-hmm.
You know, cause if your character moves through their story, never getting into an argument, never butting heads with someone or having a different opinion, from someone else, then that would be very unrealistic.
Yeah, I agree. And then you talked about the romantic tension.
Oh, right.
Sexual tension is also a form of that romantic tension. And I think it's a different thing.
Yeah.
But it's also a tension that I think is huge. Mm-hmm. In my book, Dragon Watchers, that tension between Kata, my main character, and Taryn, it is there from the very beginning. They don't like each other.
Yeah.
But there's something there between them. And then this scene, I had to look back and I tried to find this scene because I remember it being the first time where I was like, oh my God, they're going to end up having sex. Because that tension was there. And I don't know that you'll get that from this little blurb I'm about to read, because it built all along. But this created by the, when I hit this point and this happened, I felt that tension as I was writing it. Water glistened on his chest, droplets following the contours of his abs down to the waist of his pants. My eyes couldn't help but follow. I felt uncomfortably warm for some reason. When he saw me watching, his face stilled and his green eyes darkened. I mean, that is sexual tension. It's there.
Absolutely. I mean, I feel like the, you know, I was uncomfortably warm, you know, it automatically is like, oh, I, you know, I'm warm about this. I like him, but I'm uncomfortable about it.
Mm-hmm. And his eyes darkening. So he's obviously feeling something too, but she isn't quite sure what he's feeling because they've been hostile in the past.
Right.
Dragon Watchers is full of sexual tension and I didn't even mean for it to happen. It just, it happened. And along the lines of sexual tension is flirting.
Yeah.
Flirting is a great way to raise tension. It could be, you know, the romantic tension growing between the character and a love interest, or it could be a tension that creates anger when someone flirts with someone else's person.
Right. Yeah.
You know, that leads to also, you know, tension is what is raising the temperature, so to speak, of whole situation. So flirting is also a good way to increase tension, whether you're meaning it romantically or manipulatively,
yeah.
Or for spite, someone trying to make someone else pissed off.
Yeah, no, that reminds me a lot of, you know, you saying you didn't mean for it to happen reminds me a lot of Monroe in my Mac story.
Mm-hmm.
He was not supposed to be a love interest whatsoever, and he just decided he was going to be. So,
mm-hmm.
And it definitely increased the tension for Mac as she's trying to figure her shit out throughout mm-hmm. the entire novel.
Mm-hmm.
So, the next type of tension that I've got is like task-based tension. And the first time that I read this, I was like, what exactly does that mean? And that's really just tension that deals with seeking the accomplishment of a task. So, you know, think about like, I'm in college right now. So I immediately thought of like trying to get homework done, or trying to get these experiments done and trying to do this talk and like that kind of thing. Or trying to track down, more relevant to urban fantasy, but trying to track down a crazy werewolf before it kills people is another task that could be, you know, cause tension mm-hmm. In your main character. So your main character needs to accomplish something and there's tension that comes with that based on the stakes that are present for the story. So stakes are really important for this one. It's like, you know, I have this goal that I need to achieve and it's like, why does that matter? Why is there tension there?
Mm-hmm.
It's because of, I lost my train of thought.
We're both having that problem. I think I've done that twice already today.
I was rolling. I was going so good.
You were.
But this can happen on a small scale. So the goal can be to answer a simple question, or it can be on the large scale, which is let's save the world. You know, you've got to make it difficult to achieve their goals to increase the tension. That's what I was saying about stakes. And I mm-hmm. fell off the thought train. But basically, mm-hmm. you need to have those high stakes in order to create that tension.
So you thought back to my joke about the stakes being too low, didn't you?
Absolutely.
That was it.
Throw rocks at your main character. We talk about that all the time. Mm-hmm. To block them from achieving their goals. That will increase the tension in your novel.
Mm-hmm.
And this can be external. So the antagonist gets in the way is a very obvious one. Or internal, which is like the emotional stress about completing the task due to time or exhaustion or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
The next type of tension I've got is surprise. So this type of tension includes like plot twists or events that are unknown to the main character as they unfold in the story. So here we have like the, you know, two different kinds of surprises. The reader can be surprised by a plot twist, or the protagonist themselves can be surprised by the plot twist.
Or both.
And I think, you know, if the protagonist is surprised and say you're writing in third person, the reader does not necessarily have to be surprised.
Mm-hmm.
And as long as the reader knows that something's about to happen and the main character doesn't, that still creates tension.
Definitely.
Right. Because we're like, oh no, don't step in that trap.
Yep.
And then we know the trap
is there. Don't do it.
Right.
Horror movies do that a lot.
Yeah, exactly. Because they'll show us exactly what's coming. There's a ghost down the hallway and, you know, the person's drinking a glass of water and doesn't see it or whatever.
And that totally is reader-based tension.
Yes.
Because the main character doesn't know it yet. So they're not tense about it at all. They're hopping down the, you know, down the hallway. They have no idea that.
Exactly. And we're like, wait, wait, wait. And that's exactly the kind of tension that we want out of this surprise aspect.
Yeah.
Or the plot twist, which we can get with both the reader and the protagonist. These don't have to be like insanely significant. Like it doesn't have to be like, oh my God, this changes the entire story.
Right.
Type of thing. But they do help to show that things do just happen. And things just happen in everyday life. So I think that's really important. To show that the same can be done in your novels, because you want it to be not necessarily predictable.
Right.
Which brings me to my next point, which is we can't often predict certain events. So, you know, make it in the same way in your stories. Give a sense of what's going to happen next, and that'll add the tension that'll keep your readers turning pages.
Yeah, I like it when we, the readers, know something, like we were just talking about, that the main character doesn't. This raises the reader's tension level. And I do think that that's a mechanism used a lot in horror novels, which urban fantasy does have aspects of horror in it, especially when we have monsters, like makes me think of Patricia Briggs' Fae.
Yeah.
Some of those Fae are monsters.
Absolutely. And
there is the horror element to that. And our, although is Mercy, is that first person?
It is.
Okay. So that's different. A lot of times you can't get to that point.
So Mercy is first person, but her Alpha and Omega spinoff series is third person.
Okay.
So she is able to show, you know, that kind of tension as well.
Yeah. I think I'd talk about it later about the first person, third person thing and how that affects the tension building and the way it can happen. You know, also when the main character is acting with incorrect knowledge, that's another thing that we, the reader, know.
Right.
We know it's wrong and we know exactly what they're thinking when they're walking down that hallway. And we're like, that guy said it, but you had turned your back and you didn't hear it, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's, I like that kind. Of course I like horror novels.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I'm a big fan.
Absolutely. Which actually kind of brings me to mystery. Because like there's a lot of mystery in horror, I feel like. But you know, keep your readers out of the know with your story to create tension. So kind of the opposite actually of, you know, bringing your characters or bringing knowledge to your reader or that kind of thing. You know, the more that you leave up in the air, the more that your reader is probably going to be like, well, you know, why is it this way? What are the characters trying to do? What's the plan? Like that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And also keep your characters in the dark also, like we were just talking about.
Yeah. Don't you love it when you're in a book and you can't figure out how the character's going to get out of it? Have you read, right now I'm reading still, I know I've said this for the past kajillion episodes, I'm reading the Grave Witch novel.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Have you read this last one?
No.
Okay. Well, there is a point where, as often in her, she gets herself in these situations where you're looking at it going, how is she going to get out of this? We're in the first third of the book. So clearly she's going to get out of it. She's not going to die here, but how is it?
Yeah.
And I love it when the reader can't figure it out and neither can the character. The character has no idea how she's going to get out of it. That is a great example of this mystery type of tension.
That is a really good example. I love that because I enjoy that feeling so much of like, oh my gosh, I cannot figure out how it's going to end here. Like how are we going to get through this
and
in order to get to the ending?
As writers, we often do figure it out. And so, you know, we'll watch a movie and we're like, oh yeah, it's going to be this, this, and this.
True.
Because as writers, that's how we would write it.
Right.
And I love it when a writer is able to make it such that I'm going, what are they going to do? How are they going to do it?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let curiosity drive that tension in your novel. Make people wonder how the hell are they going to get out of this? Mm-hmm. Make everyone ask questions, make them wonder at what could possibly be happening in the events of the story. It is definitely going to draw your reader in and make them want to keep turning the page to figure out exactly how things are going to unravel. You know, there's mystery in our everyday lives. So just like every other type of tension point that I've made, we always have those curiosities. You know, I ask questions every day. I mean, I'm a scientist. So like mystery is a huge part of our everyday lives. And that makes, that could make our novels more realistic.
Mm-hmm.
An emotional mystery that could tie in with the tension of relationships is, you know, you could use, why did they say that to me? So like you can bring relationships into this type of tension. So if you're having a fight with a significant other, or your main character is, and they say something, it's like, oh, why did they say that to me? Why did they treat me that way? That's another type of tension that you can bring in as a mystery. You know, to
that's
to
true.
Ask questions, make your protagonist ask questions.
The character as well as the reader might not know something like that. Justified is another good example of that. And because I'll talk out loud, your poor father.
Yeah.
He's got writers in the family, and you know, I'll talk it out as it's happening. I'm like, why would she do that?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so I don't know as the reader, and the main character doesn't know as the main character. And then I immediately start going, well, I wonder if this happened or this happened. And your dad is like, stop. Because usually one of those things is going to have happened, and I've ruined the surprise.
Yeah. Yeah. That is very true. You've done that ever since I was like a itty bitty. You've done
I'm sorry. I'm a horrible spouse and a horrible mom.
Whatever. It's probably why I'm a writer now. Let's be real.
It may be.
But yeah, there are also bigger mysteries like, you know, who killed this person or how did this building burn down? There's no limit to what level you can use mystery as a form of tension in your novel.
You know, also with the mystery, who killed this man comes the question, are they going to do it again?
Right. And you why?
Know, that's tension. Yeah. Right. We don't know why this person was killed. So what, how do we know they're not going to do it again? We don't know.
Right. And could I be next? And right. You know, whatever.
Right.
So there are different levels of tension also. So tension within the protagonist, we talked about this already a little bit, so I'm not going to do a whole spiel on it, but adding conflict to the main characters' lives will also bring tension with it. So always make people or other characters, you know, kind of go against your main character, throw rocks at them, that mm-hmm. kind of stuff. You want us to invest in the character that you've written. Mm-hmm. And to do that, we need tension.
Yeah.
Put tension in every scene. So answer the questions like, what's at stake for the characters in this scene? What could go wrong? And what could go right? And I think it's important to have all of the answers to those questions as you're trying to build tension, because if, you know, what could go right, you're like, okay, if it goes right, then this will happen. But what if I take that away? Mm-hmm. And you can increase tension that way.
Yeah, the what if game comes into play pretty much on every topic that we
absolutely
talk about. Yeah.
Yeah. Create a sense of anticipation, which we talked about earlier, with every scene. So not only should every scene move the story forward, but it should also increase the tension in the story within the protagonist in some way.
And also, you need to vary the tension levels. I think we've talked about this before. You can't have the same level of conflict, the same level of drama. You've got to vary it to keep your reader going. You've got to give them a down when there's...
Give them a break.
Yeah. Give them a break.
Definitely.
Yeah.
I agree with that, because I think we've talked about the need for like comedic relief.
Mm-hmm.
And just like a breather moment, like, oh, okay, mm-hmm. that's a lot. I'm still anxious about this thing, but this is funny, so I can focus on that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Tension within the overall story. So there should be an element of anticipation in the overall story as a whole too. So I just talked about scenes and on the scene level. But in the overall story, this will most likely be resolved after the climax. So this will be throughout the entire book.
As a note, it could also be throughout an entire series.
There should
be a tension arc that goes beyond the first book that's still right. out there.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I agree. That's mm-hmm. a really good point. Because like thinking about my Aura series, like the entire series is going to have this big arc of conflict that will cause a lot of tension throughout the entire story.
Well, I mean, Harry Potter, as an example, the conflict with Voldemort goes all the way through the entire series, even though there's tension in the first book and there's tension in the second book and those things are resolved, there that tension continues throughout the entire series.
Definitely. And think about like partial tension arcs as well. So like in Mercy Thompson, their pack ends up being broken off from the Maroc. You know, the Maroc doesn't look after them anymore. And they're their own standing pack within North America, which means they get all kinds of things coming after them. And that's now creating a lot of tension in these later books, because new creatures and things are seeking out their territory because it's now neutral ground. So, and that is creating attention because it's like, oh, what's going to come here next?
Yeah, that was very clever of her.
Super interesting.
She's such a good writer.
She is. So there are other layers of tension, you know, such as between or within characters that can stretch the entire scope of the story and be resolved towards the end. So just keep in mind what conflicts you want to bring throughout the entire story and what tension that conflict will bring with it. And then tension with the narrator, which I think this is what you were talking about before. So this one won't really apply to every story. It kind of depends on point of view. But this is kind of tension with an unreliable narrator. So you can develop a sense of tension and conflict between the narrator and the reader themselves.
Yeah, you know, this is exactly, yes. So are you talking about first person stories?
I think it's most applicable with first person stories. Yes. You know, cause when you're in the head of your main character, you see what they see and they're going to make mistakes. That is the whole point of a story is, is making mistakes, having conflict, going through something that is worthy of writing down in a story. So you're going to see what they see. You're going to believe what they believe. And I think that does happen most with first person stories.
Okay. Yeah. That I remembered reading your notes and thinking that that was, I knew there was a first person question. So you're saying in third person ones, we do trust the narrator more often than not.
Not necessarily. I'm going to say here, so I keep thinking of Cressley Kroll's, Cressley Kroll's novels. She is very much able to get into the head of her characters despite writing in third person.
That's very true.
And, you know, I think, you know, while we know that, you know, both characters, you know, so she writes romance. So one chapter is from the woman's point of view, one is from the man's, typically. And so, you know, we know that the woman is thinking, oh my God, well, he hates me. And we're like, well, he probably doesn't. And then we get his point of view and we're like, yeah, he doesn't hate her. He doesn't understand her or whatever.
Right, right.
But I think it's still possible to have an unreliable narrator. And
how much of that drink have you had?
Just like half.
I finished mine.
My God.
Mine's gone.
But I still think it's possible to have an unreliable narrator in that situation, but only for like a limited time, if that makes sense.
Okay.
Or if it doesn't alternate characters, like if you're consistently in third person limited, so you're only on one character or whatever, then you obviously get their thoughts and what they see. And it's up to the writer whether or not they give more omniscient details.
That's true.
So it depends on how it's written. I think it can definitely be done with third person. I think it's more often seen with first person.
Yeah, I think first person is definitely more unreliable.
Yeah, I think so too.
Because you are so limited.
Right. Well, I think a good example is, again, Mercy Thompson. The way that she views Charles, you know, is like, oh, he's this scary dude. He's helped me out, but I'm intimidated by him. And then you look at Charles's point of view in Alpha and Omega, and he's like, yeah, Mercy's like my sister.
Yeah. Love her to death. Yeah.
Right. Whereas, so she's kind of like, not necessarily afraid of him, but she's like cautious of him. And he's like, nah, this is my sister. So, you know, I'll protect her or whatever. And she's, she doesn't think that at all. So I think that's a pretty good example of an unreliable narrator.
Okay. Good. Very good point.
Yeah. So we've talked a lot about types of tension and types or levels of tension and like that kind of things. But what are some techniques that I can use to actually create tension in my novels? So writing shorter sentences is a good one, which reminds me of like fighting. Oh my goodness. I am struggling so hard. It reminds me of writing fight scenes. So shorter sentences are going to make the pace move more quickly and adds a sense of urgency. And it that does. Urgency will lead to the tension.
Yep.
Use shorter words. So same reasoning as above. Shorter words can help move the pace along more quickly. Reveal different tidbits of the story at a time to make your reader curious. This goes into the mystery type of tension. You know, build it up slowly, keep your cards close to the vest, make your readers wonder what the heck is happening in this story. Color code your manuscript. I liked this tip as I was researching. I don't know that I'll actually do it. It sounds like a lot of effort, but if you're like a color coder, then it might be interesting for you. So it will help you to determine if you've packed enough tension in your chapter or a scene or even from the entire novel as a whole. So the basic idea is that you can choose different colors for dialogue, internal thoughts, exposition, whatever you want, as well as tension. Aim to have a relatively equal balance of all those colors. And if you see one color that's, you know, predominant over the others, then it might be time to work on your writing and balance those out.
That is brilliant.
Yeah, I thought it was super neat. It can help you like kind of discover what your pacing is like and, you know, what your tension is like if you highlight specifically tense pieces.
Yeah, I am so color coordinated. I mean, my calendars are color coordinated. Everything is color for me. I'm a very visual person.
Yeah.
So that is a really good idea. I just don't, like you said, that sounds like a lot of effort.
It sounds like effort, except I like that they added, you know, you don't have to do it for the whole book. Like you can do it for just a scene.
That's true.
Curious about a scene, like highlight the tension that you've put into this scene.
That's a good idea.
Yeah.
And then, so where are the sources of this tension? You know, what is that spark that sets off this tension? Mm-hmm. So for like sexual tension, is it a smell? Is it a look? You know, like Taryn, the darkening of his eyes. generally, that's used to indicate arousal of some kind. You know, what is it that makes that spark that starts that tension? What makes the character and the reader catch their breath?
Yeah.
Anger. Anger is a good one. It's everybody has felt the heat of anger. You know, we talk about the heat of anger. We've all felt that flush that we get when we get mad.
Yeah.
That's the spark. That is the source. You know, what is the source actually that sparks that, that makes that simmering heat there ready to blow?
Yeah.
It could be something as simple as a look. Think of a mocking eyebrow raised, you know, that could be enough. You can feel that heat. You know, she turned the flirting example I used before. She's flirting with them and she turns and she raises her eyebrows at the girl going, you know, ha ha ha.
Right.
That look can be a source of the tension. Feelings that you can use that might lead to the anger, that tension, frustration, pain, jealousy, embarrassment, feeling powerless, being bullied or intimidated, being rejected, worry, all of those things you can use in your writing to spark that anger that increases that tension.
Yeah.
Fear is another big one. What is it that starts that fear, that rush of, oh no. You know, look for that moment of when the realization hits that doom is coming and there's nothing you can do about it.
Right.
You have the fight mechanism, you've got the flight mechanism, the freeze mechanism. I think I'm more of one of those freezing persons. I'm just, what do I do? When you're writing, looking for tension, think about all of these things. Shock. This is that surprise one that you were talking about. What gives that shock factor? Think of things that create that shock. I like to end chapters with that kind of thing. I'm a big, that's one of my big things is ending a chapter that way. It's unexpected. I reveal something unexpected and that creates tension and the reader is going to turn the page to find out what the heck just happened.
Do you remember the part in the sixth Mercy Thompson book? It's not a huge spoiler, but where she gets pushed off the cliff. And I remember sitting up and going, oh my God, what just happened? I have to keep reading.
Yep. Absolutely. That kind of thing, that shock. That,
yes.
And was that not tension that was created in you, the reader?
It is one of the very few times that I have ever gasped out loud at a book. Like, I enjoy like the shock. I get shocked by other things too, but like the audible gasp that came out of me from that book was very good.
Karen Monning's that way too. There are moments when I put the book down and go, oh my God, out loud.
Same. Yeah. Well, and then I was reading one of her books and, you know, I was like, oh, okay, I've got so many pages left at the end of this book. I've got time. And I flipped the page and it was the end of the book. And the rest of those pages were the glossary. And I was like, no. And I was so upset because the way she ended it, I was like, no, I need more. And then I was like,
wait a year for the next one to come out.
Uh-huh.
Back to shock. There is emotional shock, like death can lead to it, breakup, mm-hmm. the breakup of, you know, a couple, losing a kid in a store. I remember you and Courtney, oh my God, we would go clothes shopping. And I'd look around and I couldn't find you and the sheer panic that comes and you all would be hiding underneath the clothes and the dresses and just thought that was the funniest thing ever.
It was.
Oh my Lord. There's physical shock, like a traumatic injury, betrayal. That is a great way to increase that to start that spark of tension.
Right.
Culture shock. Kata, you know, she starts here in Atlanta and ends up in this whole other world. And she takes her preconceived notions of Earth to this foreign world and is often shocked by the reality of their culture.
Yeah.
You know, she makes these assumptions because here in the United States or here in the world and in Earth, we do things this way.
Right.
And that's not at all how things are on this foreign land, this fantasy world. But you know, I think there's so much more to talk about. I think we've gone long, but we can do more episodes that go into detail on all these things. I think we could do a whole episode on fear.
Yeah.
You know, I think that would be a good one, or anger. So I guess let us know what you think. If you want to hear that, I would like to talk about it. I like to talk about everything.
Absolutely.
So that's all I got.
All right. I have an interview question, okay. And we can do it pretty quick. What type of tension do you employ most in your novels? Which type of tension is most prevalent, I suppose?
I think sexual tension makes its way in, even though they're not romances, that tension, even in freaking Fairies, which is not a romance at all. There's no sex or anything like that yet. And but that tension is there. I do enjoy writing that sexual tension.
Yeah. Yeah. I think mine is mystery. I think I try to bring in the mystery of things. You know, why? Also relationship tension, though. I like to play with all the relationships of my main characters, with their friends and their families and like that kind of thing. So it might actually be.
I like the shock one too. I use that tool a lot at the end of chapters. I love that cliffhanger feeling.
Yeah, absolutely. And then I also have a sentence for our listeners if they want to do our sentence challenge. And this week's is, the rope lost its tension in my grip.
Ooh, good one.
Yeah. So.
And we have gotten some.
Good.
From Jen. So at some point we are going to compile these and read them.
I think we've both been very stressed and pushed for time. So.
Yeah, I need to make time to write, because that is obviously, I wouldn't be doing this podcast if it wasn't important to me, and I just have not written in forever. I'm just so thrilled to death I'm actually able to read for a change.
Yeah.
But thank you all for listening. Thank you, Deanna and Jen, for sure, our patrons.
Yes, thank you so much.
Come check us out at our website, eatdrinkrightpodcast.com. You could watch us on YouTube, which I have all of these things posted, our website and all that there. You can email us from there, which some people have. Thank you all so much for the emails. Let us know topic ideas. I always forget. I never write down the outro.
Come visit us at our website. Did you say that?
Yes.
Okay. All of our social media is there. You probably already said that as well.
I don't know if I did or not. Oh, well, our Patreon, patreon.com/EDW. If you would like to support us, which right now I feel like we're bumbling about a little bit.
We're just a bit of a train wreck at the end of this episode, but that's fine. Thank you guys so much for listening. We appreciate it.
Love y'all. Bye.